number five, which is the Fish Washington Inland Fish Program briefing. And that is Chris Donnelly, who's the Inland Fish Program Manager. Was that lunch already? See, I'm on a food thing now. Treats. Morning.
What? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. No smoke kokanee, no sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Morning, Director, Chairman. I'll just introduce myself again. Chris Donnelly. I'm stationed in Spokane to the Inland Fish Program. It's my pleasure to be here today to talk to you about efforts that we've made with Inland Fish and promotion and revenue increase. Just a brief outline on what we'll talk about today. What is the Inland Fish Initiative? Some of you commissioners weren't here when this initially started, so get you up to speed on what it is, what progress we've made with the Inland Fish Initiative to date, and then break down some of the very specific efforts that we've taken in my program to increase revenue and outreach to the public. Talk about hatchery production, trout being our biggest and most valuable product inside the Inland Fish Program, and some of the management changes that we've undertaken in the last few years. And then something that I'd like to hit on at the end that's relevant to you is the AAA Trout Program, and discuss to you why that's a big issue for the Commission, I think. So what is it? What is the Inland Fish Initiative? And the problem that we had in starting back in 2010 is how can we, as the Inland Fish Program, retain and recruit anglers, increase our angling base, and ultimately sell more licenses and increase revenue? So big challenge. Setting the goals then for that were, again, to go along with the problem statement, how do we increase our angler retention and satisfaction? Can we increase our license sales by up to 10% for both freshwater and combination license sales? And then a $1 million increase in revenue, fairly lofty goals that we set. And why did we choose inland fish as opposed to shellfish or to salmon? And the reason being is that most of our anglers in this state, regardless of where they are geographically, choose to fish trout over the year. So 58% of our angling days are targeted at trout and warm water fish. When we take angler surveys, which we do on about an every five-year basis, we ask preference questions to our anglers. 77% of our anglers, regardless of location, will tell us they fish for trout every year somewhere in the state of Washington. Then 31% of those anglers will tell us they only want to fish for trout. And of that 31%, 29% of those tell us it's rainbow trout. So as I get further into this and you see a lot of the changes we made with hatchery production, a lot of those focus on rainbow trout because of those preferences and what we know about our anglers. We also think there's growth capacity. We have 8,000 lakes in this state, 600 of which we stock with trout. There are multiple wild trout fisheries also that exist, but lots of places for us to be able to promote, lots of places for us to be able to put fish and grow our stocking programs. Less restrictions. What I mean by that is we don't have a lot of the ESA issues that we're seeing in Puget Sound with anadromous fish. We've got some, but nowhere near what we have from a legal or ESA restriction issue in some of our other areas. And then a revenue opportunity. From the perspective, if we can create a product that individuals are interested in that buy licenses, we think we can increase our revenue through doing those actions. So when we started into this, some of the questions that we started to ask once we understood what our problem was is, well, what do anglers really want? How is it that we can grow a program that addresses what they need or what they want? We had some really good ideas of what their preferences were through our surveys, but we never really sat down and said, well, what does that mean? You like to fish for trout, but what can we do best for you? They're pretty simple, these three answers that we get, and they're consistent. It doesn't really matter where you go, you get this. Our anglers tell us, you really need to tell me when, where, and how to catch these fish. So it doesn't matter if it's a recruited avid angler or if it's a brand new person. I hear that question or that answer to that question consistently. The other one that I think probably all of us that do fish management have heard is more and bigger fish. You can never put enough fish out there from a stocking truck, and apparently you can never grow them large enough to satisfy everybody. Then the third, which again we talked about growth capacity, is we think our anglers want lots of opportunity. Give me year-round opportunity, give me trout openers, make sure I have some place I can ply my angling across the 12 months of the year. So in 2010, when we started into this, having identified a problem, having some pretty good idea of what our anglers wanted, having some idea of what they preferred, we hired a consultant to come in and work with us on developing a marketing plan, which allows us to then promote the product that we have as an agency. In that plan, there were 18 recommendations that came out. Today, I'm going to hit on 7 of those. The rest are relevant, but in the interest of time, I think these 7 are what we've made the most progress on. Some of the other 18, if you're interested, we can get into at another date. So the first one was develop an overall theme and implement a low-cost but high-profile effort. I think we're all up to speed that it's Fish Washington, and I gave you all a bag of nice Fish Washington swag there that you can take home. That's the kind of stuff that we hand out at sportsman shows anytime we get a chance to connect with anglers or non-recruited individuals. Fish Washington is the theme that we drive forward, and it is a low-cost effort from the perspective that the type of things that we're using as handouts that connect people to that marketing effort or that promotion is reasonably cheap. We'll also get into other reasons why we think it's low-cost as we go through this. 3 and 4, develop a high-quality, easily navigable online information, and then develop online mapping applications. So Fish Washington itself, while it's a logo and it's a promotable product that we can push forward, the core or the foundation of what we're dealing with here with Fish Washington is a website. If you go on in Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and you look for the Fish Washington logo and click on it, that becomes a queryable database. And it's set up to basically deal with the where's and when's and how-tos of fishing in the state of Washington. We also link that through Facebook, we link it through Twitter, and we use YouTube as a social media platform to drive that forward as well. Online mapping application, it's built right into Fish Washington. So you can do multiple things, but you can query it any way you want. We have large maps that you can then shrink down and look at specific lake sites or go out to the whole state. You can query it by county. If you don't know where fishing opportunity is in the state, this will provide it for you. One of the things that we've tried to grow over the last year is this Fishing 101 concept, just the basic how-to. Go back to the questions or answers that we get from the question from our anglers is, you really need to tell me how to do this. Even recruited anglers, but the non-recruited, they'll tell you, if you can't tell me where, when, and how to, I'm not going to get involved in fishing. So we've started to build that. And one of the, if you go on the website, look at YouTube, we have lots of how-to videos. So using both social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and the basic website that we have, I think we've made quite a bit of progress on objectives 3 and 4, or recommendations 3 and 4. So marketing opportunity for game fish in Washington, and then taking advantage of unique fishing opportunities, which when we had responsive management come in and write the plan, what they recognized about Washington is we're very diverse, much more different than many states that they'd worked in, where we have lots of what they would consider unique fishing opportunities. I think what we think is normal standard fishing here in the state of Washington, if you're from Virginia, where the responsive management company came from, they recognize that as really unique. You can fish in rainforests or you can fish in deserts all within 1 hour drive. So they hit on that as something that we should focus on. In terms of marketing opportunity, what they did inside of that plan is identified for us core marketing groups that we should aim at. And the ones that we have focused on in the last 3 years are hunters, campers, boaters, and intermittent license buyers. For myself, what I have mostly focused on is intermittent license buyers. And the reason being is that we have about a 30% churn on an annual basis of individuals that buy licenses 1 year and don't buy them the next. And they're on about a 3-year cycle. So what we've done is try to target at those individuals with small promotions, emails, outreach through Facebook, any type of social media where we can connect with them to essentially outline unique fishing opportunities in the state of Washington that may encourage them on an annual basis to buy a fishing license. Some of those are these four that are listed there. And then, of course, we measure efficacy with that by using control and test groups and following what level of efficacy we're having with reaching out to those intermittent license buyers. And I'll get into some of what we think is the profitability of this later in the presentation. Getting back to hunters, campers, and boaters, some interesting statistics I didn't understand about hunters in the state of Washington is I assumed they all fished. I hunt and fish as well. But what we knew when we got this information back in the marketing plan is about 60% of our hunters don't fish. So they're a fairly easy market for us to reach out to, and that's an upsell issue. That's about having our licensing division work with vendors and saying when they sell a hunting license, they can upsell to our to offer a fishing license. So we are starting some base promotions to work on that upsell concept with hunters. Also, working on, and if you haven't seen it on our website, part of Fish Washington is a great getaways. Some of those are focused on parts of the state where people go to hunt, and we're saying, oh, while you're there to hunt, while you're staying in a state park, out pursuing deer, have you thought about trout fishing? So a number of different ways that we're trying to connect with those. Same direction for campers. What we see in this state is a lot of our state parks, a lot of our public and private campgrounds are set around water. Well, we have fisheries in that water. So we're targeting ways with state parks to try to develop content on state parks' website that would drive people to, when they go to consider using a state park as a way to recreate, have they thought about fishing as an option when they're there. And then boaters is the last one. We've done a little bit more with boaters to this point than the other two. We have worked with Department of Licensing. And essentially, when you go to online register your boat, you can purchase a fishing license on that same site, targeting those. Interesting thing about boaters is the number of boaters that fish is reasonably low. I assumed you only owned a boat to fish, but I found out differently. And it's about 70% of all boat owners don't fish. So it's a ripe market from the perspective that there's a lot of individuals there that might be interested in fishing. Having carried that further, we've done some additional surveys in the last few years to really detect, well, you know, the used car salesman idea of what's it take to get you into a license today. A lot of these recreational boaters are not necessarily interested in getting blood in their boats. So it's a little bit more of a challenging market than was initially described to us in this plan. But we are continuing to pursue those folks as we go along. Hit yellow highlighted on the bottom, and what I'd like to segue to now is really what is our key promotable product as a program. And in looking at 5 and 6, again, a marketing opportunity for game fish in Washington and taking advantage of unique opportunities, what we do best in this state, or one of the things that we do best in this state, is grow trout. And so to just look at that program, in 600 lakes that we stock with trout, we do about 9 million of those annually. In 12 different hatchery facilities. When we looked at trout management in 2010 and brought a bunch of people together to talk about how do we increase the quality and visibility of our trout product, what we discovered is that we were very regionalized in how we were approaching trout. So those individuals that managed trout in Ephrata were not doing it the same as those individuals in King County. And so there was a big discussion about, well, what does that mean? You know, how do we change that product to get something that's standardized that the individual that's going out to angle expects the same quality product in each place they fish in the state. And what we came to was, it's the more and bigger thing, right? What most of our fisheries and staff were trying to do was focus on numbers. And so when you do that in a hatchery facility, you can only grow so many pounds. And so if you're going for numbers, that means your fish generally will be smaller. We reprogrammed most of our facilities to grow catchable trout, those fish that are harvestable the minute you harvest them, and increase the size from what was a mean of about 8 to 9 inches before we changed the program in 2011, to now we have a standardized size trout that's 10 to 13, and heavy on the 11-inch size of those, or that's basically what we would call in fish nomenclature 2 to 2.5 fish per pound. So those are nice-sized fish, big, robust, round fish. The difference between an 8-inch trout and an 11-inch trout to an angler is a profound difference when they pick it up. The other thing that we did is started to look at stocking densities. So individuals would grow a lot of 8-inch fish, and they might put 200 fish per surface acre of that size fish in a lake and think, well, that drives a big fishery. I'm in King County. I need to have a lot of fish to retain those anglers. What you find is you have a lot of small fish. You have a lot of small fish that get released. And so when we addressed this, went to a larger size fish, we knew we could lower our densities because the product that we have there is something that people will harvest. They want to utilize it. And then in looking at that, setting targets and having the discussion, because it takes a lot to change culture around how people manage fish, we really thought we needed to set harvest rates on our opening day fisheries and catch rates to monitor whether these changes would ultimately impact the recreational value of that fishery. We knew we had a larger product. We knew we were going to have fewer of them. What's that really mean in terms of fish management? Can we drive that fishery? Is it going to work out? So in that sense, we set harvest rates at 3 fish per angler to monitor and catch rates at 5. And what we see is a shifting demographic in how people use fisheries in this state. We used to just have harvest rates. We'd assume if they went out to fish, they were going to catch their limit and go home. What we see now is a lot of individuals want to come and recreate, kill one or two fish to take home for dinner and release the rest. And so with that, we threw in catch rates as a new metric that we measure. And what do we get from this? Or where did we go when we had all this planning and looking at catch rates and harvest rates and these targets? It allowed us to then redistribute our assets across the state. Bigger fish. Where are we going to put those fish that then is a higher promotable product? And then could we afford to increase stocking in certain places with these standardized fish? So in that, we improved our product. And what we ended up doing was all fish stocked as catchables statewide are stocked at that standardized size and density. So if I'm talking to you about stocking an opening day lake in the state, you know that they're going to be 10 to 13 inches long, and they're likely going to be at 70 fish per surface acre or greater in abundance. We also took some of the fish that we had in the state and moved them to different places. So we had an overabundance of fish here in Region 2 where we use rotenone and stock fry and have a lot of natural production that we can take advantage of. We still had catchables in our facilities here because we could fill that space and grow them here. We picked those fish up and moved them to more populous parts of the state, most specifically in western Washington. The question you ask is, well, does that ultimately affect the quality of the fisheries here in Region 2? Again, that goes back to this catch rate and harvest rate objective and being able to monitor. And what I would tell you after having done that is, no, it didn't affect that. And then what we ultimately did was invested about $75,000 in also increasing the number of catchable-sized trout that we could put into the Puget Sound Trough, both Regions 4 and 6. So what you can see is we knew we needed a bigger product. We needed a better product. We wanted to distribute it in a more wise way, and we needed a few more fish to do that. And so ultimately, these two things that we did gave us about 275,000 more trout in the Puget Sound Trough right around our population centers to be able to promote fisheries. So what are they experiencing today that's changed since 2010? And I should mention we partially implemented this in 2011 and fully implemented in 2012. So what they are experiencing is larger and more consistent size catchable trout. Much longer duration in the fishery, which I think is a bit surprising, and I'll get to that in a second, but consistent catch rates. So what we know about larger trout is they're much easier to catch, and it's as fish go up in size, they get much easier to exploit. So when we were stocking 8-inch fish, they're a lot harder to catch, and that's a function of gape size of the mouth and a number of different things. So what we saw was people could much more easily catch these. What was more shocking was this longer fishery duration. And I don't know if we've ultimately explained that because we have in some places lowered our densities considerably from where we were. But we're starting to see these fish trickle out into July and August in fisheries where we saw the fishery essentially was done by June. So we're still working on trying to explain that. We have good fishing opportunities across the state, and I highlight urban because I think it's critical in terms of thinking about how we increase revenue, that urban's important, and then our rural areas. And going back to this concept that, yeah, we did borrow some fish or steal some fish from rural areas, but we have other fisheries management methods outside of catchable trout that allow us to create good fisheries in those rural areas. And we didn't see any noticeable differences in fishery quality by those fish moves that we did. And then ultimately what our fish management staff gave me is this increased ability for promotion of an improved product. You finally have something to talk about, right? You can create a lot of buzz in Western Washington, and you're probably familiar with this if you've been watching our news releases over the last few years, in talking about bigger fish, more fish in Puget Sound. People notice that. Our anglers notice that type of promotion. Number seven in those recommendations is you can make all these moves, whether it's marketing, promotion, or creating a better product, but how are you really evaluating the outcomes of those marketing efforts? And so first, to hitting on creel surveys, I think I've probably talked enough about catch rate and harvest rate, but to say that we set those goals, and we are hitting those goals in most places. About 75% of our lakes hit the harvest and catch goals that we wanted to achieve on an annual basis. And in the world of biology, if anything, 75% is pretty good. 25% of our lakes missing the mark is easily explainable by cold water, cormorant predation. But to hit 75%, I thought was a pretty good mark. Angler preference survey. So we did one in 2011. We won't revisit angler preference survey until probably 2016 or 17. But we are going to reshape this to be able to ask on a consistent basis, are we hitting the mark in terms of size of trout, the number of trout? And I suspect we'll still hear the more and bigger response, because I don't know if you can ever feed that. But we'll shape those questions to then get at that. And as well, a brand recognition concept. Do you know what Fish Washington is and how that works? And then on to license sales. And I'll give you a little bit more data here in terms of what our level of success here is, license sales and revenue. So looking at this graph, starting baseline of 2012 is when we really fully implemented Fish Washington. Just looking at the goal, right, 10% increase in license sales. So at the baseline of about 670,000, in 2013 we were 13% above that. And in 2014 we were about 11% above that. And you'll see that there's this odd year is higher than the even year, and that's also a pink salmon phenomenon that occurs. So some of this that you're seeing in there, we'll need to see 15, 16, and 17 to really start to draw a trend on whether we're pushing the pile in terms of license sales. But we are seeing a profound increase in the number of licenses that have been sold since we implemented Fish Washington. There's a lot of variables at play here, really large Chinook salmon fisheries that have occurred and really large pink salmon. But for today, I'm going to try to take credit for the whole thing. And then here's our revenue. So the goal is $1 million increase in revenue starting at the baseline of 2012. We're up $2.2 million in 2013, and we're up $1.8 million in 2014. And then transitioning to the bigger issue, or not the biggest issue here, but one I think is of interest to the commission, because in 1999 we were granted the authority to purchase fish from private vendors, and I wanted to tie this into this concept of marketing for Fish Washington and what I think we can do with these triploids that we were given authority to purchase. We purchased those fish from a private vendor in the state. We develop a plan annually to stock those 42,000 fish, and then the commission approves that plan. So in spirit of what we're doing here in creating more promotional buzz around trout fishing in the state of Washington, I would like to take a completely different approach in 2015 to how we've applied those fish in the past. So there's still only going to be 42,000 of those fish, but I'd like to take more of those large fish and move them to Western Washington. I put this photo up here because it's illustrative of what we see in Eastern Washington that we're trying to promote in Western Washington. If you look at the three grayer fish in the top left-hand portion of that five fish group, those are the triploids of that 42,000 that we would purchase. And the two in the bottom right-hand portion, those are fry plant that came out of an Eastern Washington lake. And why I want to put that there is basically to tell you, in Eastern Washington, we can grow fish just like what we buy, but we do it in the lake. So those two in the lower right-hand corner were stocked as fry. What we can't do in Western Washington, because we don't have the same management tools, is grow that same size and quality of fish in the lake, so we have to purchase them. So those 42,000 fish that we're now talking about become a very important asset to move to Western Washington lakes to create that large carryover size fish experience that we naturally get here with our current management strategy. So I'll come back to you in April to discuss that further. And I just wanted to point out here with this final slide the relative importance of those larger jumbo trout. So 42,000 of the 166,000 that we have in our entire program essentially fit in that little piece of pie. So when we talk to you guys about how important these are, from a relative perspective, they're very important to our carryover fisheries in Western Washington. And with that, I'll leave it for questions.
Thank you, Chris. Very uplifting, positive report. Any questions? I have a couple observations and questions. I think the recruitment, I was encouraged to see a lot of photos of younger anglers there. And I'm concerned about recruitment into outdoor sports. You know, with the American Pediatric Society recent report saying that children through teenage years spend an average of 11 hours a day wired. I'm sure people are gaming fishing while never getting their hands dirty. So, and the social media is a whole world unto itself, as we all know. But have you done any focus group work with youth in terms of from their perspective, which I think is so critical that we overlook a lot when we make decisions, we being those that are older, that we don't really ask the next generation, or what does inspire the next generation. And that was something that we've talked about on the commission, having an advisory group that works with us on youth that we could go to with questions like that. So we would have kind of a in-place focus group, whether it's on issue of baiting that we talked about a little last night or this. But I think what would get a 13-year-old fishing or a 14-year-old fishing?
I think we could address that in terms of whether we use focus groups. We do a lot. And to be honest with you, I have not focused on youth because the concept here is how do I sell a license now? And so our focus groups have been non-anglers in both urban and rural settings and what's it take to sell a license. However, this program, as we go along, I think has to evolve to think about future measures that it takes to set ourselves up now to be successful, likely when I'm gone and retired and we're still looking at license sales. So, yeah, it's in our work plan of sorts, but we haven't gone there yet.
Because I understand the immediacy of revenue generation and all of that, but we're not, that window is not a, right. It's a pretty narrow window, because that 15-year-old in 5 years or 4 years or whatever is going to be the next generation. And I think there are national statistics on this that we are losing, you know, in the outdoor world, we're losing the next generation. And I don't know. I just think that we would be remiss. And I know you can't do all that, but I think we have to ask them, the youth, what would get them going rather than us assuming. And I think if we don't do that, and I'm sure other states are, and I think some of this is just doing some due diligence, what's going on out there with AFLA or something like that, that we will be short-sighted. But that's my little soapbox about that.
So one thing I would add to that is we do have a large youth fishing program that's generally supported region by region. We've asked the question about what's the long-term recruitability of those kids that experience our youth fishing. Working with the same contractor that helped us with this marketing plan, we're currently in the middle of a study to look at what's your likelihood of recruiting to adult fishing if you're exposed to our youth fishing program. So that is one piece of what you're getting at, but I agree it's a bigger issue, and we need to focus on a different technique to get at that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I guess I've got a really good collection of antique fishing equipment because I didn't leave fishing. Fishing left me in our part of the world. I grew up on creek fishing, and that just absolutely went away. Even fishing for trout on the Grand Round, that went away because of all endangered species stuff. And I truly would like to get back into fishing. What could a guy, is there some sites you talk about your websites? Because like lake fishing, Williams Lake, and that kind of stuff, is that be the person's best? Because I do, I watch this, I'm going, geez, that'd be fun to go do again.
Well, yeah, I think in Fish Washington, it's a queryable database, and you can find out Williams Lake's obviously on there. The Snake River in your part of the world is on there, and there's discussions about smallmouth bass fishing. If trout are your target, unfortunately for you, you're in an area where when we talked about restrictions, a lot of restrictions have come in the last 20 or 30 years to limit the ability for you to go and creek fish. And that's a challenge for us. And one of the things we don't do, and it's because it's biologically driven and sound management, we don't stock creeks with trout. And you know, historically we did do that. Yeah. And that's gone away with ESA listings, better understanding of wild to hatchery trout interactions and steelhead to trout interactions, things that we know are bad fish management practices. And so, yeah, there's parts of the world where you don't have a lot of large water bodies that are still waters. Like Asotin County, where you've lost a lot of opportunity. Having said that, you know, we're growing that opportunity in those places with still waters where we don't have those restrictions. And then I'd also offer to you, if you really have questions, feel free to call me, and I'll get you closer to some of those good fishing opportunities. Sure, why not?
Interpreter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We talk a lot about this youth movement or lack thereof, and the chair rode over with me and we talked about it for about 4 hours. I guess it seemed like Sip only made me stop at Burger King. I think there's a combination, and I've struggled with this for years in the industry that I'm part of, which is the recreational boating and fishing industry. I've struggled with leadership in the manufacturing side, and they've tried everything, you know, and everybody just runs out of ideas. You know, how do you get there? Somewhere, I think there's a combination between perhaps asking the youth what they'd like to do, but also getting them out from that wired environment like the chair spoke of, and get them out on a creek or on a pond or on a lake, out doing something. And I think that's where our biggest bang for the buck could be, if we could get the youngsters that haven't had exposure to catching a 3-pound triploid actually doing that sometime. And I mean, I know there's sport groups that do that, but I just wish there was some way we could actually start to see some serious involvement by youth, because I'm totally convinced that if we don't do that, the things as we know it now in the next 50 years won't be the same at all, and there won't be near the opportunity or near the participants in hunting and fishing are the stewards of the resource of the future. If you don't introduce them to that, they won't be around to be the stewards. They won't care. So I wish we could come up with something, Chris. You're real creative, so maybe we can come up with
We're not done thinking about it, so we'll continue to work on the issue.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation.
Any other comments? Well, thank you again, Chris. Appreciate that. We're